This is Jazz. And this is Jazz. And this is Jazz. And contrary to popular opinion, great jazz in all its forms is still being played and recorded on Jazz on the Air every Sunday from 2:30 till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Each week brings a different host with a different perspective on the music, both old and new. Jazz on the Air, Sunday afternoons at 2:30 p.m. on WUSB Stony.
That's right, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook right now, where it's 6 o'clock, and that means it's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, the 20th day of February, 2007, planet Earth. And the reason for the slight delay, I make this mistake every time. I come in and I print out the news thinking that that means I'm actually going to be able to read the news. And, you know, there are people who say, you ever get this, when you criticize something, when you say something's wrong, they say, well, why don't you fix it then? Why don't you shut up and fix it yourself? And, you know, I'd love to do this. I'd love to fix the ink on the teletype machine so that I can read it. But I don't know where the ink is, and if I did know where the ink was, I wouldn't know how to install it. Because I don't think I've ever done it. The machine is something like 50 years old. I wish I could bring the microphone into the other room. You'd hear, we have one of those old dot matrix printers that prints out the news. It's great. It's taking a trip down memory lane. But the point is, our ink cartridges have not taken a trip to present-day reality, and unfortunately, what I have is just basically maybe a fifth of every letter has shown up, and it's a shame, really, because it looks like some of this news might be kind of interesting. I'll give it a shot. It's really going to strain my eyes a lot. All right, the BBC, I assume, is reporting that British Prime Minister, see, I already know his name, so I don't have to read that, Tony Blair, will announce an inflatable timetable, a new timetable for the withdrawal of British troops from Iraq. Okay. The announcement will reportedly come tomorrow. Yeah. Oh, some 1,500 troops. I couldn't figure out what that word was. Some 1,500 troops will reportedly return home in several weeks. 1,500 troops returning home in several weeks just from England. Wow, I mean, they're actually doing something. We keep sending more in, and they're kind of backing towards the door. So, yeah, no, I'm not going to read any more of this because it's hurting. It really is. But I think it pretty much sums it up anyway. Yeah, you know, I'm happy with the way things turned out in the last week. A lot of people have asked me, Emmanuel, are you happy with the little weather thing that came your way? I was complaining in previous weeks that we didn't have any winter yet. Well, last week we got winter. Not much in the way of snow, but it all kind of froze over and turned into a really a nice ice storm and a frozen over surface of the ground, roads, driveways, sidewalks, you name it. And it just started thawing out today, actually. So for the last week, everybody has been slipping and falling and sliding all over the place, and it's been great fun. And, I'm sort of in the mood for a break because there are things I have to do, and they involve traveling over frozen surfaces. So right now, I'm kind of happy to be able to walk without falling and to be able to drive places that normally I wasn't able to. But after a couple of days, you know, I'm down for having more of this. I really am. More ice, more snow, whatever. We can take it. And that's the thing. You know, after a while, people are able to take it. They're able to deal with the fact that, hey, there's snow on the ground, or, hey, it's cold outside, without panicking. You know, the first time of the year, this is what happens in New York, the first time that snow is forecast, even if it's a dusting to a half inch, everybody hops into the SUV and goes down to the wholesale club where they can buy 55-gallon drums of meat and all the things they need to ride it out, to survive. Got to get through the harsh weather conditions. And it's really pretty pathetic because, you know, you can probably ride a bicycle through whatever weather we get without much of a problem. And, of course, the first day or so after some kind of weather hits, people are flipping their cars over and crashing into each other and running around screaming. But after a few days, after, say, 3 or 4 days, when you realize, okay, you know, nature's not kidding, it's really winter and it's going to stay winter for a while, you kind of grow up, you know? You grow up and you get used to it, and you stop acting like an imbecile. You learn how to drive in slippery conditions, you learn how to dress appropriately, you learn how to buy things at the store without making it seem like it's the end of the world. And really, it's incredible. Watch how some people act that first snowstorm, if you can call it a snowstorm. Pushing and shoving and grabbing things they don't even need. And that's out here in Suffolk County, where everybody is so nice and mild-mannered. Nice and polite. Unlike Nassau County. I'm not trying to cause a rivalry here on the island, okay? Because we're in Suffolk County, and Nassau County is the county closer to the city. But come on, I mean, Suffolk is just, people are just so much more polite and friendly. It might be fake, it might be false, it might be just covering for something a lot more evil. But, you know, I learned that. I learned that when I was shopping in Nassau County in places I wasn't familiar with, how unforgiving people are. And I like to think I carry some of that with me wherever I go. In fact, I was very nice this week. I did something nice. In New York City, I actually carried the politeness of Suffolk County all the way into New York City. I was looking for a place to park. It was the weekend, and I didn't have the smart car. I had a big car. So, you know, it's almost impossible to find a good parking space on a weekend night in the city with a car that's normal size and not half size. And so, wouldn't you know it, I found a great space in a wonderful location, and there was all this traffic going down this one-way street. And cars stopped and double parked and whatnot, and so I see this space and I'm just going to slide into it, and it's great. Well, wouldn't you know, one of the cars, or actually trucks, big SUV thing that's parked on the side of the road, apparently was waiting for that space. I don't know what they were waiting for. They were just sitting there. They could have backed in any time, And the person, the woman driving the SUV, jumped out and said, "Hi, how could you do that? You see what I was waiting for the space? Oh my God!" And her husband comes out of the passenger side saying, "Oh, that's just not right. That's just, you're a bad person." Didn't say that, but implied it. And I'm like, you know, right away in a situation like that, you feel compelled. Okay, I'm in a situation, and I got to act appropriately. I got to be a jerk. You know, I got to get into a fight about something stupid like a parking space. And so there's those instincts that are kind of boiling up to the surface. And I'm like, you know, how am I supposed to know what it is you're doing sitting there? You're sitting there on the side of the road contemplating God knows what. I saw a space and I pulled into it. Why? You didn't have your turn signal on. You didn't pull into the space yourself. And, you know, there's a little bit of that going back and forth. So finally I realized, you know, I don't want to be this kind of person. I don't want to be somebody who fights over parking spaces. So I just, I say to them, look, I, after making my point, I say, "Are you going to use your turn signal in the future?" And the woman said, "Yes, I will." And I said, "Okay, fine." And I gave her the space. She was very happy, very appreciative. We parted the best of friends. And I realized, you know, after something like that, I couldn't have done that 10, 20 years ago, probably. I would feel obligated to, you know, to basically reinforce my position and be really hard-lined about it. And I think a lot of us go through life like that. We don't know what we're arguing for, but we know that we have to argue, and we can't back down. Backing down is seen as something unthinkable. And I guess as you get older, you get a little bit more conciliatory. Now, this is a fair notice to people who know me. That doesn't mean you're going to get away with anything, okay? So don't think that. Don't think that for a second. Just saying there are certain situations where you take a look at yourself and you say, "What am I doing? What's the point of this? This is stupid. Take the high road." And I did take the high road. There were no parking spaces there. Cruised around for a half hour, finally found something. But boy, it was an adventure. Okay, speaking of adventures, I'm sorry I have to do this. It's been hectic the last week or so. All kinds of things going on. I don't want to get into the details. They'll just bore you. I know they bore me. But something, actually, I do have to do now, and it's unfortunate I have to do it while I'm on the air. Apparently, time has come again where I'm on jury duty. This always seems to happen. It doesn't always seem to happen, but it happens about every 4 or 5 years or so. And there's more than one kind of jury. You know, there's the local juries, the federal juries, the conspiracy juries, and whatever. And it all started last week. I had to call and see if I was supposed to show up. And that's what I have to do right now. Where's the number? Is that the number? Okay. I have to call this number, which I'm not going to announce on the air. I'm also not going to tell you my juror number, because I think that would be, even though it doesn't have any personal information about me in my juror number, it's possible you might be able to figure it out somehow. You know? I'm looking for my juror number right now. This is, I'm on telephone alert. Okay, I have to call this number after 4 p.m. Okay, there's my juror number. It begins with the letter C, I'll tell you that. Okay, letter C and the number 2. There. That much I'm going to admit to. Now, 3-9, getting outside line. Okay. And now we call the special number, which you can't tell what it is because all the tones sound exactly the same. And let's see if I have to report tomorrow at an ungodly hour.
This is the telephone standby message for Tuesday, February 20th, 2007. For reporting for jury duty, please fill out Part A of your juror summons.
Does this person sound enthusiastic or what?
All questions on the back, sign it, and enter your Social Security number.
You love your job, don't you?
On the front. Juror C0226 through C. 0300 inclusive. Report tomorrow, Wednesday, February 21st, at 9:30 a.m.
Okay. Well, that kind of messes me up tonight, doesn't it? Gotta be at the... Oh, boy. 9:30 in the morning. How am I going to be up at 9:30 in the morning? I woke up today at something like 3. And I have a radio show tomorrow, so I can't really stay up all night or I'll sound like I'm completely out of it. Great. And the thing is, you know, once I get there, once I get to the place and tell them that I'm suing the city of New York because of false arrest, you know, couple of years ago. That generally gets you out of any jury consideration right there. Okay, now, I really just found out this now. I didn't call before, so I'm kind of shocked. I thought maybe I'd have to go in on Thursday. I didn't think I'd have to go in tomorrow. Boy, that really, that puts a real damper in things. All right. Now you see the kind of week I've been having. All right. Let's go into a little bit of bad things that are happening in the rest of the world. Maybe I'll cheer up. Well, gosh, this is a story. You hear about this? A woman who boarded the wrong bus on an attempted shopping trip from Thailand to Malaysia returned home after 25 years. Yeah, she told her 8 children she accidentally boarded a bus bound for Bangkok instead of Malaysia. Once there, she boarded a second incorrect bus, and apparently that's all you get. She couldn't read or speak Thai or English. She spoke only the Yawi dialect used by Muslims in southern Thailand. And she said the noise and traffic of the big city confused and disoriented her, leading her to board the second wrong bus to Chiang Mai near the border with Burma. Boy, you got to be careful. 25 years? The woman said she spent 5 years begging on the street in the city and was often mistaken for a member of a hill tribe because of her dark skin tone. She was arrested in 1987 on suspicion of being an illegal immigrant and was sent to a social services hostel when authorities were unable to determine her origins. However, last month, 3 students from her home village arrived at the hostel for training, and they were able to communicate with her and help her find her way home. Wow, that is the shopping trip from hell. Okay, we've been hearing all kinds of panicky reports about what Iran is up to. Get this, the news reports are just insane. They really are. This is the headline that a lot of us were met with this past week. Iran, we would hit back at an attacker. And this is supposed to make us afraid. This is supposed to make us angry, scared, I guess supportive of building up more military in the area. Yeah, Iran's supreme leader said on Thursday, if the United States were to attack, the country would respond by striking U.S. interests all over the world. All right, you know, again, I have to say, what is wrong with that? That's a logical response. If Iran were to attack the United States, oh, that's different. We'd obliterate them. We'd nuke them. We'd wipe them off the face of the earth. And we'd erase all records of their ever being here in the first place. Yeah. Because we're the United States. They can't do that to us. But if we attack them and they respond, my God, that's a threat. That's a threat. We have to attack now because they have said they're going to retaliate. I mean, what do you expect a country to say when they're feeling threatened? And this is exactly what's going on. Anyway, the comments by Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. You know, notice how their leaders always seem to wind up with the same name of Ayatollah Khomeini somehow. How many of those are there? There's a bunch. But he's the Supreme Leader. He said this the same day that another top official, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Javed Zarif, warned in a column in the New York Times, and that's the best way to warn people of things, that efforts to isolate Iran would simply backfire on the United States, increasing sectarian tensions in the volatile Middle East. Well, that to me just seems like free advice. Something that we're too dumb not to realize that isolating countries there is going to lead to tension. Maybe it's time somebody told us. The United States has denied it has any plans to strike Iran militarily, but has sent an additional aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf in what U.S. officials call an effort to show strength in the face of rising Iranian regional influence. And again, that's said like it's a bad thing. Regional influence. You know, we're not of that region. We're of this region over here. We have influence over Mexico and Canada and places like that. Rightfully or wrongly, we do. So it's normal for countries that are already in different regions to have influence in those regions. Iran being one of them. Syria being another. Israel being one of them. Not the United States. So, yeah, building up military presence there, but denying any any plans to strike militarily. Although everybody from George Bush to Hillary Clinton saying that all options are still on the table, including the nuclear option. Yeah, our leaders are considering striking in a nuclear way, unprovoked. Meanwhile, Iran is also supposedly close to enriching uranium. Again, what's the big deal? I mean, yeah, it sucks that anybody has access to this kind of stuff, but you can't say, I can have access, but you cannot, and expect no ramifications from that. Iran may be as close as 6 months away from being able to enrich uranium on an industrial scale. That's according to the head of the United Nations nuclear watchdog. In an interview with Britain's Financial Times, which was published today, Mohammed Al-Baridi, head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, said intelligence estimates put Iran at least 5 years from being able to develop nuclear weapons. Iran, which says it has no plans to make atomic weapons, has installed scores of enrichment centrifuges at a pilot facility in a plant near the central Iranian city of Natanz. Well, you know, it would be nice if there were no nuclear weapons in the world. It would be nice if there were no weapons at all in the world, but the world doesn't work that way. And if you simply try and keep things out of people's hands, out of countries' hands, they're just going to try all the harder to get them. What's best is a sane policy where everybody is watching everybody else, not just certain people watching other certain people and being immune from anything, because that just leads to all sorts of resentment. Meanwhile, speaking of saner heads, three former senior U.S. military officials warned that any military action against Iran would have disastrous consequences and urged Washington to hold immediate and unconditional talks with Tehran. The Bush administration has increased the regularity and vehemence of its accusations against Iran, prompting speculation it could be laying the ground for military attack against the Islamic State. In a letter to London's Sunday Times, the three former U.S. military leaders said attacking Iran would have disastrous consequences for security in the region, coalition forces in Iraq, and would further exacerbate regional and global tensions. The current crisis must be resolved through diplomacy. And those three were retired Army Lieutenant General Robert Gard, former military assistant to Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, retired U.S. Marine Corps General Joseph Hoare, it's an unfortunate name, who was a former Commander-in-Chief of U.S. Central Command, and retired Navy Vice Admiral Jack Shanahan, who was a former Director of the Center for Defense Information. They urged the U.S. government to engage immediately in direct talks with the government of Iran without preconditions. Yeah, that's sane. Talk to people without setting all these silly conditions. Okay, and in the false alert of the day, an employee at the Canadian Embassy in Paris experienced a nosebleed and fell ill shortly after opening a letter on Monday, triggering fears that the letter was toxic and prompting authorities to temporarily shut down the embassy and adjacent street. And then the alert was lifted after police determined the employee had been ill for some time and had been experiencing nosebleeds. My God. So it's not just the United States that's going nuts. It's everywhere in the world, but pretty unbelievable. Meanwhile, some good news out of Turkmenistan. If you recall, the leader of Turkmenistan, who had been a leader for over 20 years and put his face on the money and did all kinds of other crazy things, he died recently. And now there's a new leader. And this hour, I'm going to actually attempt to pronounce his name. And it might take the entire hour. Who knows? We'll see. Turkmenistan's first internet cafes have opened in the capital. I can even say the capital, Ashgabat. I like saying that. Ashgabat. Yo, Ashgabat, come here. Yeah, I like that. It's a good name. Ashgabat, Turkmenistan. I think I have to do a show from Ashgabat, Turkmenistan. Just to say, hey, this is Emmanuel, I'm talking to you from Ashgabat, Turkmenistan. They probably don't like it when you make fun of their name, and I'm not making fun of the name, I'm admiring the name. Okay, so I can't be making fun of it if I like it. Anyway, this story is dated from Ashgabat in Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan's first internet cafes have opened in the capital, which is known as Ashgabat. As the new president of the tightly controlled country declared that all schools soon will have internet access. The move comes 2 days after officials confirmed as president. Gurbanguly, Okay, I got past the first name. That's not so bad. I kind of like the way that sounds, too. Gurbanguly. Gurbanguly, Gurbanguly. Okay, Gurbanguly Berdy Mughamadov. All right. A little rough the first time I said it, but it wasn't that bad. I got through it. Berdy Mughamadov. All right. Now, all together. Gurbanguly Berdy Mughamadov. Gurbanguly Berdy Mughamadov. Okay, it's almost like I'm learning a foreign language. Anyway, he has pledged to make other changes from the path set by the late autocratic leader. Oh, boy. Sapermaret Niyazov. I think that's how you pronounce it, but I'm not sure. We have opened internet cafes in Ashgabat, and similar ones in regional centers will follow. Berdy Mughamadov. I had it. And similar ones in regional centers will follow. Berdy Mughamadov said, I skipped a syllable, didn't I? 3, 2, 1. And similar ones in regional centers will follow, Berdy Mughamadov said in televised remarks at a government session. Soon each public school will have web access. And he capitalized the word web, too, so he knows what he's talking about. Located in downtown Ashgabat, the two cafes equipped with 5 computers occupy 2 small rooms outfitted with plastic chairs and shabby desks. In the solemn Soviet-era Central Telegraph Building and in a dilapidated telephone exchange station. They sat empty for most of Friday, said cafe administrator Jenet. Oh, boy. Kude. What's going on in this country? How do you have time to say these names? I mean, even if you know how to pronounce them, they're spelled so. They take up an entire line just to write them out. So they must take up time to say. Is there a reason to do this? Why can't you have short names like Smith, Jones, you know? You don't have that many people there. We're a country of something like 600 million people, and yet we have Smiths, we have Jones, we have all kinds of short, one-syllable names. And it may not be the best place in the world. It may not be Nirvana, but we do get by. Okay? We do get by with short names. And we're able to say more. We're able to fill out the rest of the sentence with more verbs and nouns and adverbs and pronouns. And if you look around, people are talking all the time and not just saying the names. But this is insane. By the time you finish saying the name, the person you're talking to has lost interest or died. Maybe that's what happened to the former prime minister, the former autocratic leader. Somebody was telling him to meet somebody, and they didn't even make it through the name before he keeled over. I'll probably be shot just for saying that. But anyway, let's continue here, and I'll just call her Janet K. for now. I'm sorry for losing it like that, but, you know, I think I put in the effort. I put in the effort to try and say the name, and I did the best I could, and I snapped. I snapped. All right. Let's take a drink here. All right. Get it together. Janet K. said that they sat empty for most of Friday since very few people had heard about them, but she insisted that no websites would be blocked and there was no visible attempt to register visitors or log the sites they were surfing. Okay, if that's true, I'd like somebody listening in Turkmenistan, which, by the way, is also a long name, but never mind, to email us. And if you're the very first person to email us, otw@2600.com, from a verifiable address in Turkmenistan, we'll send you something. We'll send you, I don't know, a free subscription to the magazine. Is that what you want? Tell us what you want. We'll do it. But you got to be in Turkmenistan. You got to be the first person. And it's got to be fairly soon, not 20 years from now. Because one of the listeners here could just go over there and mail us and then come back here and get all the free stuff, and that's not fair. So, yeah, all websites are accessible, she said, which is more than you can say for schools here and businesses and internet cafes in this country as well. Try accessing 2600.com from Easy Everything. It doesn't work. Previously, web access was restricted to a limited few and independent online publications blocked by government filters. It was unclear exactly how popular the cafes will be or how accessible, given that one hour of computer time cost about $4, which is the equivalent of 5 pounds of fresh beef in a country. We don't measure things that we spend in terms of beef, do we? What do you get paid? I get paid about 7 pounds of beef an hour. Come on. It makes it seem so barbaric. 5 pounds of fresh beef in a country where two-thirds of the population live below the poverty line. What if you could put five pounds of beef on the table and get an hour of internet in exchange for that? Anyway, the connection speed is fantastic, but the price stinks, said Gulsar B., a third-year university student who dropped in to check her email. Dropped in to check her email? That means she has email to check. So this couldn't be a first. It means I had to have had access before. Under Niyazov, whose name I'll say out of respect and because it's short, who ruled the gas-rich nation for two decades, access to the Internet was tightly restricted to state and officially approved groups, embassies, accredited foreign journalists, and international organizations. B won an overwhelming victory over his five contenders in the presidential vote on Sunday and was sworn in on Wednesday. The vote was tightly controlled and was not monitored by foreign election observers. So I guess it wasn't really fair then, was it? Unrestricted access to the Internet was one of B's election promises, which also included educational reforms, raising pensions, and support for private entrepreneurship, which is the longest English word I've said tonight. And that's the news from Turkmenistan. Yeah. Oh, here's a little leftover thing from Iran. I'm sorry. I meant to mention this before. You know how we're saying, the U.S. government is saying that there's signs that there's Iranian involvement in some of the explosive devices that have been found in Iraq, which does not surprise me. Would not surprise me at all. Seems like a normal thing to do in the next door country. But regardless, they're denying it. But here's something interesting that happened. You might have heard about this. In the city of Zahedin, there was a bombing at a school. This is in Iran. Now, it didn't cause any fatalities. But what Iranian officials now are saying is that they've discovered that elements of that bomb were manufactured in the United States. Yeah, couldn't get more weird, could it? And a lot of things are manufactured in the States. A lot of chemical weapons come out of the United States. Landmines, things like that, all sorts of nasty things you wouldn't expect come out of the United States. So while they could be making it up, it could also be true. All right, our email address, as previously mentioned, otw@2600.com. I'd like to take some phone calls, maybe have time for a few more than last week. But let's read some letters and see what people are thinking out there. Again, we always like to hear what our listeners have to say. Dear Emmanuel, I thought you might enjoy this site. Every week, they give characters from the show 24 points based on cool things they did. Or take away points due to not-so-cool things they did, then give them ranks, etc. It's very humorous. And you know what? I don't think it gave the site. No, I don't see the URL on here, but I'll read some of the quotes. Jack Bauer has 252 points. The latest thing he did was show his MacGyver skills by making a TV antenna into the jaws of life. This is actually a few episodes back. He knocked Graham, his brother, out the first chance he got, plus 6 points for that. Tied him to a chair, 2 more points. Invented new Bauer torture techniques, the menacing plastic bag over the head, and he got 8 points for that. Oh, my God. Morris O'Brien, one of the co-workers in the CTU, total of 91 points. Set world record speed for compiling a list of names during a commercial break. Get 7 points for that. President Wayne Palmer, clocking in at 24 points. Every line of dialogue consists of almost all whispers. Minus 10 points. Every episode, they update with new and very funny statistics. Just thought it'd be something you were into. Yeah, it would be if I had the URL in front of me, but I don't have it. And if we get it, we'll mention it. Speaking of 24, this is rather interesting as well. Although denying that he is reacting to growing international criticism, Howard Gordon, an executive producer of Fox's 24, has disclosed that the show plans to cut back on torture scenes. What was once an extraordinary or exceptional moment is starting to feel a little trite. Yeah, you know you're in trouble when torture starts to feel a little trite. The idea of physical coercion or torture is no longer a novelty or surprise. Wow, how pathetic a time do we live in. It's not something that we as writers want to use as a crutch. We'd like to find other ways for Jack to get information out of suspects, such as saying, please. Yeah. Watch for that. Gordon's comments came after the New Yorker magazine reported that Brigadier General Patrick Finnegan, Dean of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and an eminent military lawyer, had flown to California to meet producers of the show in an abandoned warehouse behind locked doors. Finnegan reportedly told the producers that promoting illegal behavior on the show was having a damaging effect on U.S. troops in Iraq. Finnegan told the magazine, "The kids see it and say, if torture is wrong, what about 24? In response, Gordon told the Inquirer, "The thesis that we are affecting our soldiers in Iraq in their treatment of prisoners is being exaggerated, I think. Hopefully, there are a lot of filters between their watching 24 and their work in the field." Well, I'd like to know. I'd like to know, seeing how torturing somebody always leads to a positive outcome, and it always does on that program, might somehow stick in the mind of somebody who captures a prisoner, who thinks that prisoner might know more than he's saying. Anyway, yeah, the show's really going on a rapid downhill spiral, I think, with all sorts of crazy plot twists and predictable writing. Okay, I'm going to predict something. I don't think this has been predicted. Well, it probably has been. Everything else has been predicted, but it probably hasn't been hinted at too much. But here are my predictions for what's going to happen in the remainder of the season. If you haven't seen the season so far, you might not want to listen because it might ruin things. But, okay, you had previously mentioned Morris O'Brien, who had been tortured. Basically, he was lured out of this ultra-secure building, and then captured, and then forced, because he's the only person in the world who could do it, forced to arm one of the nuclear devices that is still out there. And all this was done in the space of about an hour. And while he was being tortured, he was literally having a power drill being drilled into him in various parts of his body. And the person was saying, "You know, I can keep doing this. I've got plenty of drill bits and lots of time." So after resisting for quite some time, he eventually gave in and built the device. I don't know why he couldn't build a fake device that would seem like it was working when it really wasn't. If you're really a good programmer, I think he can do that. But in any event, in the end, he betrayed. He betrayed the United States. He betrayed his co-workers by giving them what they wanted. Despite the fact that he was being tortured beyond belief, he's seen now as somebody who did something bad. So he has to redeem himself. This is the way the program works. He has to redeem himself. He's all mopey now. He's all depressed. And the only thing that can happen is he has to sacrifice himself in the future to prove that he really wasn't such a bad person after all. So that's my first prediction. Second prediction, and this is really where it's gotten silly, Jack's whole family, Jack Bauer, the agent who saves the world every time, his whole family has gotten involved now. His father, his brother, apparently they were the masterminds behind all this evilness going on, or at least heavily involved with the masterminds, and more interested in covering their own asses rather than saving lives. So Jack's brother was one of the evil people who was killed by Jack's father, who apparently is now another evil person as well. Now, Jack's brother was married to a woman that Jack apparently had interest in the past, and they have a son. Well, I think you know where I'm going already. You can predict what I'm going to say. In the end, and in some episode in the future, it's going to be revealed that the son is yours, Jack. That's your son. Yes, little Josh Bauer is actually Jack Bauer Jr. And these are things you can predict just because it's predictable. It's predictable. What's not predictable is all the crazy twists and turns that don't make any sense, because you can pretty much shuffle a deck of cards and get more logic. Okay, 212-209-29. Whoa, I'm giving the wrong phone number, aren't I? I'm giving the station in the city. I'm sorry. 631. I hope I didn't give that number before and people are calling the wrong station. 631-632-WUSB. Yeah, 631-632-9872. That's our phone number. I don't think I've ever done that before. Giving out the wrong phone number. Wow. So, yeah, give us a call and let us know what's on your mind. Unless you're already doing it on the other radio station. Okay, what else has been going on? In response to last week's list of memories that a listener sent in, a few more to add and update. These are things like playing hopscotch. What were some of the other ones? Riding bicycles and staying out past dusk and just all the things that we do today, not doing those things, not having email, not having cell phones, not being slaves to technology. You know, I remember growing up, you had a phone, you had one phone. Most everybody had a rotary phone. And this really wasn't all that long ago. It wasn't 100 years ago or 50 years ago. I'm talking a decade or two, maybe two. But people had rotary phones. You only basically had one phone in the house because that's how the phone company worked. You had to pay for a second phone. You had to rent the phones from them. Eventually that changed. But still, it took quite some time before the cell phone craze took over. And when a phone rang, it meant something. There was no caller ID. You didn't know who was calling. It was an event. The phone rang. You picked it up. You were surprised by who was on the other end. You didn't know who it was going to be. And when the phone rang, it rang with a nice, solid-sounding bell. Not like the stupid ringtones that you hear today that people pay for, and I can't figure that out either. And you could really hurt somebody with a phone. They're nice, solid pieces of equipment. And when you got angry, you could slam it down. You could hang up on somebody and not just press a little no button. Hang the thing up and smash it down as hard as you possibly could. It felt good. It was a release. And we don't have that anymore. Well, some people might. If you hold on to those phones, and they will last forever. Anyway, this listener is adding some more memories to the ones that I'm obviously fixated on. Climbing trees. Swing long jump. I don't know what that is. Swing long. Is that where you jump off the swing when it's still going pretty high? Swing long jump. Urban exploring. Maybe just because I lived in a high rise. Well, definitely urban exploring is part of it if you live in the city. I don't think you'd dare to do it today because everything is so dangerous. I swam like a fish as well. And speaking of snow, whatever happened to snowball fights? Well, you can't have snowball fights today because you don't know who has guns. Somebody might take your snowball the wrong way. Yeah. Anyway, the difference is that I'm not yet 22. Back in the 90s, I had no ideas about computers and the internet, cell phones, faxes. I hardly watched TV over all the video games, or maybe it was just that I lived in Toronto. Kids today here will probably find the same things I did. And this person prefers anonymity, and you will get it. An anonymous listener. Dear Manuel, the off-the-wall show is something I look forward to every week, but it is over quickly, and it appears as though many callers don't get a chance to talk as a result. Well, you know, I'm looking at an empty switchboard right now, so those callers have a chance. Yeah, they got a chance to call now. 631-632-9872. Country code 1. So I don't accept that excuse that there's not enough time. There's not enough callers. Not enough people with courage to pick up the phone and dial. Tell us what's on your mind. How you feel in the world today? Do you feel safe? Do you feel scared? Anyway, continuing with this letter. You said your fundraising had been remarkably successful. In addition, from an intellectual entertainment standpoint, Off the Wall is probably the best thing on the station. Well, I wouldn't go that far. There's a box here of all sorts of promotional material, and I can hit a button, and virtually anything that plays... There's a crowd of people who will swear that's the best program around. A big crowd. So there might be some people who feel this program meets that criteria, but we'll see. Anyway, I know I've never heard anything as good anywhere else. Oh, shucks. You need to get out more. What would you think of asking the station for more time? You could certainly use it for more call-ins. Signed, Jack. Jack, is this Jack Bauer writing to me? Oh, my God. That's kind of spooky. Well, you know, Jack, it's a question of basically enough time in the day. There are a lot of people here at this station, and you don't want to step on anybody else. Plus, there's also the fact that there's only so much time for us as individuals. I find it amazing that I'm able to creep in here once a week and do what needs to be done. It's tough. It really is. And I don't know if more time would... benefit anybody. Let's make the best of the time we have. I see we have one call. Okay, great. But in case you're a lunatic, I'd like to have another phone caller as well, you know, as a backup. No offense, but it's good to have more than one. 631-632-9872. On the other show last week, we had all sorts of problems getting a call. dial tones and people who weren't saying anything and people who were saying things and stuff like that. So as soon as we get a couple more phone calls, we'll go to the phones. And those of you calling in now, don't give up. 631-632-9872. If you get disconnected, just hang up and call back. It's a free country. You can still do that. Here's a cheery story out of South Carolina. Stephen Bixby considers himself a patriot and a prophet with no regrets about gunning down two law officers at his parents' home, according to hundreds of pages of letters written after his arrest. The letters each signed Chaotic Patriot Steve also reveal his personal demons and ironclad beliefs, and in one he questions his own sanity. The 39-year-old man was convicted Sunday. How did he get convicted on Sunday? I didn't know you could do that. After a 5-day trial of murdering the two officers, on Tuesday, which is today, the penalty phase of his trial begins. The same jury that convicted him has a choice of sentencing him to death or to life without chance of parole. His family was upset because the state wanted to take about 20 feet of land near their home to widen the highway. Witnesses said Bixby and his father, who is awaiting trial on murder charges, had threatened to gun down any officer who set foot on their land. You know, so many people say things like that. Step on my land, you're going to pay the consequences. Well, this is what happens. This is how one of these promises played out. During deliberations that lasted less than 2.5 hours, jurors asked to rehear some of the letters to a former girlfriend, in which Bixby described how he took one wounded officer's gun, handcuffed a dying man, dragged him inside the house, and read him Miranda rights. Yeah. I started to cry, but I got refocused on the job, he wrote. If we had wanted to, the whole day would have been an entire bloodbath. The officer was dragged into the house after he was gunned down while standing on the front porch. These are basically people who were just sent to deliver something or to check on something. Police surrounded the house for the rest of the day in a standoff with Bixby and his father that didn't end until after hundreds of rounds were fired. He and his father were both charged with murder. Public defender Charles Gross said Bixby composed more than 1,500 pages worth of letters in the first year after his arrest that day in 2003, and in them Bixby is steadfast in his belief that the shootings were justified, calling them right and correct in God's eyes. We, the people, are a majority. The laws were made to protect us from the police. On the stand for the defense on Saturday, Bixby's mother agreed. He has the right to protect his property by any means necessary, testified Rita Bixby, 74 years old. Although she wasn't home during the gun battle, she was charged as an accessory because authorities say she knew her husband and son planned to harm police officers. The 20 feet of land the family refused to give up has since been used to expand a highway that runs near the now vacant home. The letters include ramblings about the significance of some numbers, including mathematical equations involving his birth date, age, and length of jail time. Oh, my God. You know, I'm not saying it's just for the government to take your land or for all sorts of other bad things to happen, but this, is this a response? Is this what gets you what you want? All right, 631-632-9872. We got a bunch of calls. Let's go to the phones. You see, I was afraid that would happen. Let's go over here then. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Manuel. Hi.
It sounds like you're on a speakerphone.
I am?
Well, it sounds that way.
Maybe. I'm in a large room.
You're in a large room. Okay. I'll turn you up as far as I can. What's on your mind?
Yeah. I'm a very active anti-war demonstrator, and we assemble locally here in the Stony Brook area every Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And we also have an opposing group across the street, and there's some real staunch, you might call them chauvinist patriots over there, one, an ex-military fellow, and he kind of acts like a 65-year-old Rambo, and he kind of carries on a shouting dialogue with us quite often. But the point is, I'm glad you brought up the terrorism thing, because I often use a terrorism jumpsuit, an orange jumpsuit, to demonstrate the humiliation and the degradation of our foreign policy in exporting freedom to a country that doesn't want it or can't handle a military occupation force that sets up occupation and terrorism and, torture. So he once broadcast or set up a sign across the street and showed it to us and flashed to us, thank God, Jack Bauer is back. And us knew who Jack Bauer was at that time.
Uh-huh.
So we thought, maybe we'll have to go home and Google Jack Bauer, see who that is. So I'm just glad you brought up this thing about the 24 hours program. With
yeah. Well, you know, it'd be nice if we just gave those people television. You know, you go watch television. Let us fix the mess now and get the troops back home and make the world a better place.
Yeah, they should stay home and stay away from the internet themselves and let you know, some demonstrating people who have principles of dialogue, diplomacy, and peace has a way to preserve the future on their mind, and let them do the demonstrating.
I'm curious, though, somebody who counter-demonstrates against you, what is it exactly that they want to do at this stage?
I think they're just hell-bent and dedicated to the idea of victory at all costs.
And I'd like to ask them, how much are you willing to spend on this, and what's going to achieve victory at this stage?
Yeah, well, we have asked them, you know, why Iraq? You know, what's the connection to conquering terrorism, and how did it come about that we're in a civil war? And they say to us, well, every civil war starts with, every civil society and free republic or democracy starts with violence, so we should be there, kind of thing.
So the way to start them on the path to civilization is to just start a whole lot of violence.
Yeah, carnage. Carnage and, tipping the precipice toward Armageddon.
Well, if that's the method, we're definitely on the right track, because we certainly brought violence to those people. Tell me about your demonstrations. Where are they? How many people attend?
We assemble every Saturday, 11 to 12, over on 25A and Bennett's Road, and we're part of a active, ongoing peace group that's been there since early 2003 and even predated that in another location near the Stony Brook campus.
Well, I know the location. Is that by the CVS pharmacy or what?
Yeah, right there. We have the south side of the road, yeah. The other demonstrators have the north side.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out, though, why that intersection? It's not a particularly nice intersection.
Well, it's pretty high traffic, a very big volume, people coming from Nichols Road turning off, people coming from the campus, sports fans going back and forth to soccer leagues, practices,
uh-huh.
and families still going by, picking up bagels, and the CVS and so forth, the bank is right there.
Oh, that's right, you got the bagel shop there. Okay, that's a lot of traffic. So do you get what kind of response do you get from people passing by on the road?
Each quarter of the past year, we've gotten a higher volume of affirmations and, like pats on the back from the inside of their car, you know,
uh-huh.
sometimes flashing a V sign or thank you, sincere appreciation of our presence.
And how many hostile responses?
And, pardon?
How many hostile responses do you get?
Oh, we get a good number of them, you know.
Really?
I've been approached, and some people come over and try to talk and say, you're shouting at me, and, you know, I try to carry on a dialogue. But some people actively want to know what we're about, even though they're opposed to us, and
uh-huh.
they do come over and talk to us.
It's hard to imagine how people wouldn't just agree that it's gone wrong and we need to fix it at this stage. I don't know how stubborn people can possibly be.
Yeah, what do you need after your dictator who was the... equivalent of Hitler was hung, and no weapons of mass destruction were found. What do we need to be there for?
Yeah, well, maybe to fix the problems that we started, but you know, we're not going to fix anything. Basically, the ramped up security has started now. The Americans are in the streets a lot more and clamping down, and the violence has simply gone up accordingly. It hasn't worked, and it's not going to work. And if I can say that, if I can sit here in Stony Brook at a radio microphone and get it right when our own leaders can't, that says something really sad, I think.
Yeah, the escalation of scale has occurred. They're attacking an American base. They just killed two people by attacking an American base, and
mm-hmm.
six helicopters have been downed in the past 5 weeks.
Right.
Yeah, so the ante is up.
Okay, so now your demonstrations are what day again?
Every Saturday. Saturday morning, 11 to 12.
11 to 12. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll see you down there at some point. Corner of 25A and Bennett's Road in, that's Setauket or is that Stony Brook? Which is that?
East Setauket.
East Setauket. Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks for carrying on.
Okay, thanks.
631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello, Emmanuel.
How are you?
I am great. Wow, I'm just surprised.
Surprised that you're on the air or surprised to hear my voice? Or both?
I guess both.
Okay.
We'll get right into it, I guess. I wasn't listening at the beginning, so I don't know if you've already talked about it, but I heard about the Republican National Convention stuff in 2004 that finally you guys would be getting some justice.
Well, has something new happened?
Well, yeah, well, I don't know if it's newer than new, but it's Democracy Now! Yesterday.
Oh, yes, I heard that. Yes, tell the listeners, though. It's very interesting.
All I heard was, I mean, I didn't really get it. I'm not really a lawyer and didn't really understand it, but, like, it just seems to me like it's really cut and dry. You guys won as far as that word can go.
Well, we're winning. We haven't won yet, but basically what happened was it was ruled that the NYPD is breaking the law by videotaping protesters at protests where no illegal activity is taking place. What I'm involved in goes beyond that even, because I wasn't even in a protest when I was picked up off the street.
Yeah, I remember.
So it's that case is still going on, and it's going to be going on for some time. But, yeah, it seems like... like justice is prevailing slowly, and the NYPD is being revealed for what they really are, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, because I watched that whole thing with interest and the blogging, basically blogging you're doing on the website, the journal you're keeping.
Yeah, blogging.
From my Toronto, my Torontonian perspective, up here, it was kind of it was just weird to see the lies unfold and the lack of opposition to them. And I'm glad that finally there's some sense. You hear them talking about how, yeah, it was wrong. And just hearing that, like, you know, if you get justice out of it, if you get something out of it more than that, great. But just to hear that was comforting to me.
It was especially frustrating to see the lies right in front of your face where the cops were saying, well, you chose to be arrested. And basically they all believed that because that's what they were told, that we all, like, were there and we decided to do something illegal when in actuality we were just on a street and it happened to be the wrong street and they just swooped everybody up.
And you happen to be writing for the wrong media, too.
Yeah, exactly. You say you're a Torontoian. Are you the same one that wrote to us or a different one?
I was, yeah. I'm Adrian. I wrote, you read the letter on the air. That was really great.
You didn't want your name mentioned.
Yeah, you mentioned my name, yeah.
Oh, I did?
I don't care.
I thought you said that you wanted anonymity. Was that somebody else?
No, that was somebody else.
Oh, okay.
I left my name. I really don't mind. I
hate to think you violated your own privacy, but...
oh, well.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay, so how are things up in Toronto? Nice and cold?
It was freezing for the past 2 weeks. You know, people complained, even though we're Canadian and we're probably used to it, but we complain anyway. It's warm again now. It was plus, Celsius. Wow, I gotta convert in my head here. You probably know.
No,
that.
You don't have to convert. We can handle Celsius.
It's plus 5 after being minus 20 for
really?
2 weeks straight.
It was about 5 today here in this area, 5 or 6 even.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You guys are. Yeah, I don't really know the weather patterns, but you guys are kind of close.
We're kind of close. Hey, listen, we're out of time.
But, yeah. Cool.
Thanks for calling and keep listening. And again, write to us otw@2600.com, and we'll be happy to read your letters on the air and take your phone calls next week. All right, I guess I got to deal with jury duty tomorrow and figure out how to work that into my schedule somehow. Find out what happens next week. Maybe I'll be on some amazing murder case. Who knows? I'll give you all the details live as it happens. Good night. Down.
WSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.